Joining us for a return visit to Fresh Air is songwriter, producer, singer, and pianist Alan Toussaint, one of the most important behind-the-scenes figures in the history of New Orleans rock and roll. He wrote the songs Mother-in-Law, Working in a Coal Mine, and Dr. John's hit Right Place, Wrong Time. His classic song, It's Raining, took on new meaning after Katrina and was sung at many benefits. His song, Yes We Can, has become an unofficial anthem of New Orleans. Toussaint sings and plays it on a new CD called Our New Orleans 2005, featuring new recordings by New Orleans performers.
Now is the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And do respect of the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kind. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Great gosh almighty.
Alan Toussaint from the new CD, Our New Orleans, 2005. For many years, Toussaint has been dividing his time between New Orleans and New York, where he has a studio. But his house in New Orleans was flooded, so since the hurricane, he's been spending most of his time in New York. He's in New York today. This is one of the few Fat Tuesdays that he's been away from New Orleans. One year, he was a Grand Marshal of a Mardi Gras parade. I asked him what that means.
Well, it's just a title. However, you're the chief honcho. You're the big cheese that day. You don't have to do anything special but throw your wares, your beads and bears and other things that you have as throws. And it's quite an honor, I must say. But for as activity of having to do anything else in particular, you don't have anything to do other than what the other members do, and that's have a good time and throw things off the float to people.
Now, you were born in 1938 in New Orleans?
Yes, I was born in New Orleans.
Do you remember your first Mardi Gras experience?
The first Mardi Gras experience? No, I couldn't pinpoint the age I was. I remember very early putting on a little clown outfit, and I was I had my little Mardi Gras outfit on. I was on her about six, I guess. But everything else is a little faint.
How'd your mother feel about you going to Mardi Gras when you were a boy? Did she want you to go?
Well, as a very little boy, I went with my mother, of my sister and brother. So that worked out okay. Yes, it was okay. However, we weren't allowed to go over where the Indians would congregate early in the morning when I was a very young boy, because the Indians were very violent when I was coming up. I mean, early in the morning they would come out and the spy boy, who was like a reconnaissance guy, would take this long stab and he would throw it and it would stick up on the outside of a door of a barroom or near my barroom. And he would throw it high right over the door, and that was to let other Indian tribes know and anyone who was not a part of them that you don't come anywhere near this. That's the guy they call my spy boy and your spy boy. Well, that's the spy boy. And they would get in this early barroom, and they would really get tanked up. And, I mean, by the time they would come out of there, they were ready for Mardi Gras Indian warfare. and lots of very strong and even violent things would happen. Mm-hmm. And there was even some bloodshed and fights. And I'm glad to say that later on, as things progress and through the evolution, After a while, they begin to knock them dead with a needle and thread about out-sewing each other rather than out-fight each other and whatnot. And so my parents, my mother definitely didn't allow us to go out and hang where the Indians were congregating early in the morning, knowing they were getting their Kickapoo juice going quite early.
So do you have a favorite Mardi Gras experience from all your many years being a part of it?
I couldn't say I had a favorite, but I, because I know the different things that happen. Like at a certain age, like at 15, I played the trumpet 1 year in the Mardi Gras parade out in Metairie, because I was the pianist in the Flamingo band, which Snook Zieglin, myself, and some other neighborhood kids were in. And of course, if you got a little marching band, there's no piano.
Yeah.
So I played trumpet for that 1 year, and the next year I played snare drum. And so those were different ways to see Mardi Gras. And another year, either before that or after that, I played piano on the back of a truck, these flatbed trucks, and they'd have a piano on there, and I did that on Mardi Gras. And other Mardi Gras, I just was out among the people and looking for the Indians like we all do. And a couple of Mardi Gras, I rode motorcycle in the parade, me and some of the other guys who we used to, at least who used to ride together. We rode motorcycles as the motorcycle group in the parade. So I've seen the Mardi Gras from many different points of view.
Alan Toussaint, I was so relieved after the hurricane when I heard that you were safe in New York. I'd heard so many rumors immediately after the hurricane that you were in the Superdome, and you know that you know things weren't going well with you. So, what actually happened after the hurricane with you?
Let me say that I was never in the Superdome or never in the convention center. Not that that would have been the end of the line for anyone, because if people were there, I could have been there. But the day before the hurricane hit, at 2:30, I checked into the Astor Crown Hotel on Canal Street, Canal and Bourbon, fourth floor. And I only took the clothes that I had that I was wearing because I thought I'd be back in a day or so. And some of my laptop computer and a couple of discs and a couple of videos, some videos. And I checked into the Astor Hotel, and the storm hit early that, well, in the wee hours of the morning or night. And that's where I spent the actual storm, the hurricane forces. However, a couple of days later, as we all know, after the breach in the levee, water began to rise. In fact, when I walked out the front door one of the mornings, like the next morning or so, I saw water seeping up through the concrete between the cracks in the sidewalk, the little line that's in the sidewalk. And I would hear on this battery-powered television that I had that water was rising in areas like that hadn't happened before. And, of course, we all know what happened after then. It began to rise and got out of control.
So how did you get out?
The last day of August, when it was obvious that I wasn't going to be going back to my residence and taking the boards down as I had been doing in the past, I heard that there were buses going to Houston, Texas, and you could walk around the corner to the Mondeleon Hotel and get on one of these chartered buses. So out of the back of the Crown Hotel, just because it was in the quarter, and there wasn't much water in the quarter at all, there was just about maybe calf-deep water out of the back of the hotel, and once you got to the middle of the street, which was higher than the gutter, you were high and dry again. So I waded through that little bit of water and walked around to the Monteleone Hotel and went in and purchased a ticket for the buses that would come and take folk to Houston, Texas. However, after waiting outside, a long line of folk outside waiting for buses, those buses never came. And we waited till it even got dark. And I saw a gentleman from the neighborhood walking up and down the street. And he told me that the buses that you all are waiting for, they are not really coming because some authority figure stopped them many blocks away and had them to go somewhere else, like to the Superdome or somewhere else, and do another kind of job, pick some other folk up. And he said, but I have a school bus around the corner that for a very small fee, we're going to Baton Rouge and Lafayette. So I knew there would be an airport in Baton Rouge, so I got on this chartered school bus and went to Baton Rouge, which took about an hour and 10 minutes, and spent the night in the airport in Baton Rouge. And 5:55 the next morning, I took a flight to New York City.
What shape is your home in? Your home in New Orleans?
It's gutted out. It still stands, but it has to be totally renovated, which I don't mind. I'm not going to take the ground floor. It's a two-story building, house. I'm just not going to take the ground floor seriously anymore because I've had like 12 or 13 inches of water in my house before, more than once, where you have to get new hardwood floors or whatever. But after Katrina, I hope we all live and learn something. I'm not going to take the first floor serious. It will be a garage. anything important, anything more important than a paperclip will be upstairs.
What are some of the most precious things that you lost in the hurricane?
Well, handwriting things that I was working on at the time, because writers make notes constantly. We collect scraps constantly. And we have files that says work in progress. But some things on some of my recording hard drives that I didn't take as seriously as I should have, they're gone, things that I was working on.
So the songs that you were writing and you had notes or things on your hard drive, did you remember them even though you lost your notes?
Well, I would like to say I remember, but a person only remember if they remember what they remember.
I can't. I see your point.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yes, right. Something may come up in 5 years and say, hey, remember me?
I wrote that and I forgot.
Yeah.
On the New Orleans tribute record called Our New Orleans 2005, you perform something solo piano called Tipitina and Me. Tell us about this.
Well, Professor Longhair is my patron saint.
And he was your mentor.
Yes, indeed. Yes, that's a humorous way of saying that he was my mentor. And I always say I don't leave home without him. I think there's a lot of Professor Longhair in me, even in some of the more milder songs. And I call him our Bach of rock in my area. And I associate him as having inventions like Bach and some of the other great composers who are responsible for when we hear Domino 7, we go to the four chord. Well, Professor Longhair, I consider as profound as I do Bach or Brahms or Beethoven or Handel or anyone else in the symphonic market. Of course, market wasn't the best word. But Fess, there's things in Fess' life that you can take just that one segment and build a whole life on it. And so by me thinking of him as seriously as I do, to slow Tipitina down and play it in a minor mode and see it as movements rather than just the song Tipitina, it become a more serious entity, and it began to live up to Bach of rock, making it more than just something sounding fancy to say.
So this is your tribute to Professor Longhair and to his song Tipitina.
Oh yes, and I guess many things that I do are tributes to him. They are tributes to him anyway, and this is one of them, I'd say. Yes.
Well, let's hear it. This is Alan Toussaint, Tipitina and Me. It's Alan Toussaint performing Tipitina and Me from the album Our New Orleans, 2005. Do you know when you'll be able to return to your home in New Orleans?
No, I don't know yet because it's still gutted out, and I passed by day before yesterday, and even though there was no reason to go in or anything, I just have to pass by anyway. And there are more trailers now on my block. And I'm glad to see that because that means that there are people in those trailers who are going out and doing a bit of work on their houses when they can and getting people to work because it's hard to find a workforce as well. Even though there's lots of rumors about foreigners coming in, we need those foreigners to come in. We need everyone who will pick up a hammer or a ladder or whatever. I haven't seen anyone who was able to bring their place to a total livable stance because it's still kind of a dead zone. There's no stores open in the area. Electricity isn't where you can plug in anywhere. But I don't know how long it'll be before I will be in, but we're working as diligently as we can. I have an architect who's working at things, and a carpenter who's looked and said, yes, he'll do it, and we're moving on as rapidly as we can.
Where do you stay in New Orleans since you can't stay in your own home?
I stay in hotels, and my daughter have a place in the Treme area, which I've stayed a couple of times, which was very nice, but no room service. So I stay in hotels usually.
Well, Alan Toussaint, I wish you the best. I hope your home gets finished soon and you're able to return to it. I really thank you so much for spending part of today with us.
Thank you so very much.
Alan Toussaint spoke to us from New York. He's featured on the new CDs Our New Orleans 2005 and I Believe to My Soul. He and Elvis Costello collaborated on a new CD that will be released this spring. We'll close with a track from it. Here's Costello and Toussaint performing Ascension Day. It's basically Toussaint's Tipitina and Me with a lyric by Costello. I'm Terry Gross.